Welcome to Rebalancing Act. We are Kieran and Leslie Ann, two lawyers and friends. Welcome to episode 2 of our finance series. First, we talk divestment. Now we're going to talk about something a little bit closer to home, personal finance and green investing. The first thing I want to say, personal finance is personal. And you know, while we are multi-talented ladies, one thing we are not is investment advisors. Leslie, and you're not an investment advisor, right?
I'm barely an advisor of anything.
All right. Well, that's not legal advice. There you go. So this is not a podcast about us telling you lovely listeners how to spend your money, nor do we want that kind of responsibility.
I don't want that responsibility for my own money.
Exactly. It's a tough one. It's stressful. Money is stressful. And, you know, we're here to bring a little bit of clarity to one aspect of that moral stress. Because what we're going to do today is give you a little primer on how personal finance can be used as either a tool to accelerate or slow climate solutions, because I think it can do both, and how you can use your portfolio to accelerate these solutions without being, you know, forced to invest only in windmill companies or something like that.
Although, if they paint them black, I would be willing to invest.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think these windmill companies are successful, but what I'm saying is you really don't need to get into, like, the quote-unquote green things to make a big difference. I think stats are always contested, but I think it's useful to say that the Make My Money Matter movement, based in England, estimates that by making your retirement savings green, you are cutting potentially 21 times the carbon of going vegetarian, giving up flying, and switching your energy provider, which are things that we usually cite as powerful individual actions to take. So you can make a big difference. And I think it's nice, you know, sometimes the bridge between, like, individual action feels inadequate, collective action feels impossible. This is a way to do it a little bit, you know, with a little bit of both. Yes, it's an action you can control as an individual, but by choosing what to do with your money, you are making collective statements. That's just, you know, it's just what the nature of the stock market is. For the purpose of this episode, we're not going to go into the full depth of financial instruments. Even though I know what a derivative is, do I need to or want to explain it to anybody else? Yeah, so we're going to focus on capital stocks, i.e. the shares of companies that you can purchase in different formats. Are you ready, Leslie Ann?
I'm ready.
Thank you. Thank you, SpongeBob. So I guess the first question that you might be asking us is, I hear you, Kieran, but I'm skeptical. Do personal finance and investments, can they actually influence climate solutions? Is it not just a black hole? So, you know, as with all climate solutions ever, you got some cynics and you got some skeptics. And I feel like it's fair. You got to lay out both sides of the argument. So, Emily Stewart at Vox tells us, it's hard to actually invest green, and you might not be doing it even if you think you are. Which I think, yeah, you always want to be doing the good version of the solution. I'm not anti this statement. I think it's true. If you're not doing it properly, you're not going to make a difference. I do think this touches a little bit on the difficulty of headlines in the internet age. Poor Emily, I'm really calling her out. And I think she had good content, but she's saying the thorny truth about socially responsible investing. Think you're investing ethically? You might be surprised. Honestly, I would maybe read that article and think, what's the point if it's not even going to make a difference? And in the body of her article, Emily actually explains you can do it properly. You just actually can't be susceptible to greenwashing, which I think is fair. People love calling their investments green or ESG. Sometimes it even lets them charge higher fees on financial advising. But I also think you can do it properly. You can do it well. What we need to do, the first thing that we need to do, I think, is really level the informational playing field a little bit. So to get to Emily's criticism, I think this is true. The first thing when you're thinking about environmental investing is to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff or the greenwashing from the actual real deal. It's funny, Leslie Ann, what does ESG mean to you when you hear it around these days?
So I always forget how the acronym actually goes, but I think it's environmental, social, and governance, which in many of the parts of the internet I frequent lately has been a lot of conversations around the social, around equity and diversity, around the wage gap. As well, I spend a lot of time with people who talk a lot about governance. It's a thing on some of the boards I sit on, and like I love them dearly, but I think too much about the governance part now, which makes me sad.
That's so interesting, you know? So I was on hold with TD today. And they did this kind of annoying thing where instead of playing hold music, they were like, we're just going to like subject you to excerpts from like short interviews with people at TD explaining various initiatives, including ESG initiatives, which I have to say is not effective because then I think the point of hold music is you can tune it out. Whereas you just are subject to these interviews, which were fine, but I was like, I didn't come here for this. I came here to tune out the elevator music until I was able to talk to someone. So
I feel like I would just keep thinking with the start of every new interview that a real person had picked up, and then I would just keep being disappointed.
Yeah, I shared my feedback with the person I was talking to, and that seemed to be the general consensus, and they assured me that actually the interviews are being phased out, which is great, because it was not ideal. But even in that interview today, people were talking about ESG just as a proxy for, like, climate solutions.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's fair. You just, you know, you read, this index fund is ESG certified, and you're like, ooh, certified, ESG, great. But, like, ESG, not an accredited term. Green, not an accredited term, not terms of art. They don't mean anything at all in a way that's, like, actually rigorous.
Which is really important for us to remember, I think. Like, it's like the whole organic versus, like, non-GMO and, like, all of these other terms around our food and what do they mean and, like, what actually matters and, you know, what does it mean that my water is non-GMO? Like, of course it is. There's not a genetic to modify.
Yeah, I remember being on the subway and, like, this energy drink was, like, lactose and gluten-free and I'm like, yeah, wait, what? But that's your branding? You know, to give Emily Stewart at Vox again some credit, that is the point that she was making. She even made that same comparison. So I think the first thing to do, if you want to do environmental investing well, is to make sure that you're not being sucked into the marketing and that these things that you're, you know, reading about and believing are actually true. Because good intentions don't necessarily go so far, and I wouldn't even trust those same funds to also be the ones that are necessarily the most profitable. So that does lead into a point I did want to make. You know, this really is moving away from the personal finance, but I think it's worth mentioning. There is no substitute for good regulation. I'm a regulatory lawyer, love regulatory law. I believe in the value of good regulation. Milk should be pasteurized, should be the type of milk that you think you're buying. You know, you think you're buying 1% and you get homogenized and it's shocking. We like regulation and there should be more regulation in the security space, which is stocks again, that does specifically mandate what you actually have to set out to show if you are planning on marketing yourself as an environmental fund.
I do agree with you. I do like regulation. I would like to be allowed to buy raw milk. That's all.
That's a hot take, Leslie Ann. To me, that's a hot take.
I mean,
what's the benefit? I feel like it just makes you so sick.
No, oh, I drink raw milk all the time.
What?
Like, it's like richer because it's like straight from the cow. So it's also not like 1% or 2%. It's like whole milk. Makes really great eggnog.
Was the eggnog that you gave me last Christmas?
I did not feed you that. No, no. It was not raw milk. I would have warned you. But yeah, I've grown up drinking it all the time and I've never been sick from it. I shouldn't say all the time. It's not like it's all the milk I drink, but like we would regularly get milk. But we would regularly get milk from like our dairy farmer friends. And like they wouldn't buy milk, they would just drink their milk.
Interesting.
Anyway.
So there actually are existing regulations in Ontario that we can use to achieve this end. And I think the primary one is having greater stringency through securities disclosure. So with securities disclosure, you need to disclose the material risks that your company faces. And I think there's this idea that is voluntary currently with sort of the threat of litigation looming behind it, that if your company faces risks from the changing climate, and if they face risks related to, you know, potentially becoming obsolete, it's important to disclose those risks. Those are security risks, potentially their insurance risks. I think that is currently part of securities disclosure, and there are standards in place to really encourage that, but it's not mandatory. There is I would say there's pressure now within the securities community and the securities regulation community to make this mandatory and to make it more rigorous. So I think, you know, that is good. That will cut down on some of the greenwashing, at least for in the Ontario context.
Yeah, I think it'll cut down some of the greenwashing. And I think also, like, for anyone wanting to think about business and, like, even what businesses to get into employment-wise, not only investment, it's so interesting to look at the depth of potential climate risks to business. I don't know if I told you this, Kieran, I think I did, but I did some of the free courses available from the Climate Disclosures Standard Board on understanding how to do climate disclosures and things like that. Highly recommend. Super interesting.
Absolutely. And we're going to be talking about that next episode with Pete from Manifest Climate, who does that as part of his job, which will be really interesting. But I think easy to say, the risks are immense and they are definitely being generally underdisclosed. As well as, I think beyond that, even I think the types of disclosure needed, for example, a company's contribution to emissions, you know, things that relate more to the proactive side of stopping climate change as well, could definitely be encompassed in regulation. Because you know what? Corporations don't do things out of the goodness of their own hearts. They don't have hearts. They're not human, even if the law tells you that they are people.
Legal person, non-human person. The things we have to think about.
It's true. They don't have empathy. And that's fine. But
is it
important to remember?
I wish you could build empathy into a corporation.
I think that's what regulation is. It's a substitute.
Wow, that's a hot take and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
More useful than my hot take.
Your hot take is so hot. I love it.
Actually, it's cold because it has not been heated for a long period of time.
You are right. It has not been pasteurized. So, important context for the securities regulation, I'd say. You might be wondering, all right, how does this apply to me, though? What can I do? What am I getting out of this? What information? So the first thing, I think, if you're working with an investment advisor, I think the most important things are to trust their credentials, communicate your goals and preferences about your investments, whether they're pro-climate or even just anti-fossil fuels. Same as, you know, using your usual due diligence and business sense to seek out a good advisor. And the nice thing is, like, I know a lot of millennials, like ourselves, are actually using robo-investors instead of human investors. And you actually can do the same thing with your robo-investor. So, for example, Betterment has a climate-positive portfolio for investors to buy into. And I know that they're continuing to evolve it over time. So I think there are options if you're working with someone that is, you know, some person or a thing, an algorithm that is giving you investing advice. So that's good to know. And then
totally.
Beyond that, I think if you are someone, I'm going to go into two approaches here. The first is the stocks approach. Stonks. And then stonks. The second, stonks. I'm sorry, the internet has broken me.
Never apologize for stonks.
And then the second is the index fund approach. And I think they're both good. It just depends on, are you one of those people that is reading about the profitability horizon and history of different companies in your spare time? Maybe, maybe not. If you are, there is a lot of guidance on the internet about how to invest, and I think that that's where most people get the information that they use to inform their investment decisions. So some of it does direct you towards green investments in a non-greenwashy way. So I can talk about some of the resources out there if you want to do a bit more deep dive into the stocks that you're purchasing. So one of these resources is an organization called As You Sow. It's a great website that produces reports on different parameters, including on how to evaluate investments. So for example, one of the most recent reports, it's free, is their 2021 Corporate Plastic Pollution Scorecard. And Ooh. Their methodology is that they rank company positively both for the presence of goals, assess whether companies meet those goals, and then assess the general, I think, morality and pollution, or lack thereof, of different companies' practices. So if you are somebody that wants to go out and look at individual stocks and buy individual stocks, you actually can find information that you cross-reference with the other things that you use informing your investment decision to make, you know, to either make that decision or don't. And I think, again, you know, I said you don't need to make the most speculative investments in emerging technologies. Your own risk profile might be lower. I would say, like, my own investing risk profile is such. I'm not out there venture capitaling it up. And I think in that case, even personal divestment from dirty energy, no Exxons, no BPs, you know, the rebrand of British Petroleum, which is hilarious, is actually a great way to get there. And even beyond that, I will say, you know, some companies that you actually might be surprised by are taking bold stances on climate action. And they're companies that aren't quote-unquote necessarily green. Microsoft, Stripe, which is a payment processing company, Shopify, you know, homegrown here in Canada, are actually all making pledges to do negative emissions technologies. And their approach is that they're spending a lot of money upfront by providing financing for startups with innovative technologies to help us achieve drawdown, even beyond mitigating and ending our emissions. I think most ambitious forms of climate action, which I believe on, also include rebalancing the atmosphere and returning some of that carbon dioxide back to the terrasphere.
I see what you did there.
So I think, you know, whether or not you want to invest in Microsoft, Stripe, or Shopify, I think that's fine. But know that there are companies that are distinguishing themselves from the pack. That information is available when you're looking to make investment decisions. And you can do it at all risk profiles and in all ways. And, like, one of the nice things about the very daunting task of decarbonizing every aspect of our society, which is maybe just not in general that nice a thing, but everybody has something to contribute, don't you think, Leslie Ann? Like, the people that are doing buildings need to change. So if there's a building company, this is the most grade one example ever. Shows how much I know about building companies, construction companies. But there's going to be a construction company out there, and they might be both most profitable and the one doing the most to reduce emissions.
Well, and I mean, for maybe a less grade one example, I mean, even one of my favorite breweries has recently been certified as climate neutral by a nonprofit called Climate Neutral, which assesses different companies for their emissions, how they're mitigating emissions, and what they're doing to generate carbon credits or offsets. And this brewery is now certified as carbon neutral, which is really exciting. And it just gives me more and more reasons to spend my money on their beer.
That is exciting. We'll need to cheers to that when you come back to the city.
And for all our listeners who remember the balcony bog scheme.
Yes.
They have a bog wine. Sorry, a bog beer.
That is branding that I crave.
That's all I needed. That's all I drank this summer was really just, you know, the bog beer.
Ah, so good.
Anyway, Whitewater Brewing. Yeah.
Shout them out.
All day, every day. Shouting them out, not the beer.
And you know, the point that you make about conscious consumption is valid too. Again, I know us millennials are famous for wanting that, but also, it matters.
It does. If a brewery is not having customers come buy their beer, they're not going to be able to afford to invest in green energy projects to help them become carbon neutral. It's as simple as that.
It is as simple as that. Who said investing was complicated?
Stonks.
Stonks. So if you are more into index funds than individual stocks, and, you know, I understand the appeal. You are quite literally putting your eggs in many baskets. You also do have options. You might be asking, how do you avoid polluters? Some index funds are actually setting out precisely to provide an alternative because, you know, it makes sense if you're taking a cross-section of investments. You might not be happy with the carbon management plans of some of those, but what are you going to do about it? So one example, I think, of one of the most bold versions of finding a green index fund was discussed by Robinson Mayer in The Atlantic. And it was called the Engine Number One Transition Finance Fund, started by the same hedge fund that recently placed activist investors at Exxon. It has the ticker VOTE, so you can find it if you want to look it up. It's a low-fee, diversified index fund, similar to many of the classic index funds that you may be familiar with. Its annual fee is 0.05%, which is different than previous climate-centered offerings, which were quite expensive in fees, and it is now currently on par with some of the cheapest funds in the market. And this climate index fund, it has a clear theory of change, and it's vis-a-vis engagement with the companies that it's investing in. They use their money as a form of activism by placing certain influential shareholders on boards. And because the hedge fund itself is fairly small, they use their power to put leverage on the biggest three index fund providers, which are Vanguard, BlackRock, and State Street, among many other big ones, to actually put pressure on the shareholders and on the management and executive of companies that aren't performing up to task with, with taking action. So in the case of Exxon, this fund, they put activist shareholders on the board of Exxon, but they had to get Vanguard to be on board with them in order to make change. And they did successfully, which just shows how the model works.
That's incredible. I love that. I love a scheming index, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So the nice thing is, like, you don't have to go for the most intense activist-y version of the fund too to have a green index fund. There are more traditional index funds too, which are green, which have been shown to deliver returns on par with non-green index funds or even above. So I think this brings me to my last point, which is you might ask yourself, is there a trade-off between making money and contributing to positive change on climate? Even if there once was, which who's to say it's the past? There isn't anymore. I think that's clear. You don't need to have a trade-off between profit and investing in values. If you spend that extra little bit of effort, or honestly, even if you go the betterment route, not even very much extra effort, to put your money where your mouth is. You know, you can go the route of investing in climate technologies. You can go the route of investing in a company that's investing in climate technologies. It's one step removed and more conservative. You can go the route of divesting from fossil fuel funds personally, you know, again, revoking their social license to operate. And I think at the end of the day, too, like, we have to think that companies that disregard climate change, whether by failing to lower their own carbon emissions or by failing to adapt aspects of their businesses to the climate that we have today and will have in the future, aren't going to continue to be profitable. They just aren't. It's not the long-term view that you as an investor are necessarily looking for. So, all good things to think about. I think you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have your raw milk and drink it too and maybe not get sick. I don't know. You tell me, listening.
I think so. I truly do believe that is the case. And while we're at it, I also want to plug one of our previous episodes where we talked with Aaron from the Ottawa Renewable Energy Co-op, because energy co-ops are another really great form of investing with green energy projects and being able to see a return on your money, as well as being able to contribute to exactly what we're talking about here. So that was another great episode folks might be interested in.
Nice. Self shout out. Thank you. That's great.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Channeling the energy of a white man.
Yeah, absolutely. Channeling investment advisor energy.
Oh, I'm going to channel investment bro. I like it.
Yes.
I like it.
Yeah. There you go. Let us know if you have more questions. I hope this was helpful. We're looking forward to seeing you next episode where we talk with Pete from Manifest Climate about some of the things that we've touched on so far. Really, what risks do companies face? To what extent and how are they quantifying their own carbon emissions? And how can we assess what they say about what they're going to do to help solve climate change? We will see you then. And in the meantime, if you miss us, you can find us on Instagram at Rebalancing Act, Twitter at Rebalancing Act _, at our website, rebalancingact.ca, and you can find us on LinkedIn now. So we will see you one of those places.